You're listening to SpursCast, episode 485. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am the host of the SpursCast. Joining me for this episode will be Project Spurs' Benjamin Bornstein. If you're on Twitter, you can follow him, at the underscore Boomstein. In this episode, Ben and I will discuss the Spurs' 1-2 record in their last three games against the Pelicans, Lakers, and Grizzlies. From there, we'll provide an injury update on Kawhi Leonard, Rudy Gay, and Pau Gasol. Then we'll discuss the Spurs' play since February 1st, where they've lost 8 of their last 11 games, despite holding double-digit leads in most of those games. We'll go into a deep dive on some of the draft prospects in the 13th through 26th range in the event that the Spurs do end up with a pick in one of those two within that range. Finally, Ben and I will answer your SpursCast Twitter questions using the hashtag SpursCast that you all provided the listeners. And then we will preview the Spurs' next four games against the Warriors, Thunder, Rockets, and Magic. Please enjoy my conversation with Project Spurs' Benjamin Bornstein. And now calling in from Atlanta, Georgia, is Project Spurs' Benjamin Bornstein. You can follow him on Twitter, at the underscore Boomstein. Ben, how you doing, man?
I am fantastic, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. So, hey man, you know, this is going to be an interesting podcast. I'm really glad to have you on because you're what I call like our Project Spurs like draft expert. You're our guy. You know, you hit the last two players last year, Derek White and Jaron Blossom game. And now, I mean, for you in a way, there's going to be like a lot at stake here because these guys are like the Spurs aren't looking too good right now, and they're going to probably get a pretty good pick is from what it's looking like.
Yeah, they are. I was very primed to find some sleepers near the end of the first round, but now they're actually making me do some research here.
Yeah, like I completely forgot how the lottery system works, and now I've actually been having to do some research, and I'm actually going to have to watch a little bit more March Madness than usual starting next week. Okay, Ben, let's go ahead and kick off the show here. First, let's go over the Spurs' last three games since John Diaz and I recorded. John and I actually thought they'd go 3-0 against the Pelicans, Lakers, and Memphis Grizzlies at home. Instead, they drop a 15-point lead to the Pelicans in the second half and lose by 5. The Spurs drop a 17-point lead against the Lakers and lose by 4 to Lonzo Ball in crunch time. And then even last night against the Grizzlies, you and I are recording this on Tuesday. The game was on Monday. The Spurs, you know, barely got out of that one with the win too, where they won by 2 points. So they ended up going 1-2 in that stretch. Just kind of your overall impressions of their last few games here?
Not great, Bob. But that's kind of how the season's been. It's really funny because I swear every time I'm watching a game and I'm watching my Twitter feed, oh, hey, Paul Garcia is tweeting about how they have a 15-point lead this game. I wonder how quickly this one's going to disappear. That's what it's come down to this season.
Yeah, and I mean, with context, some of that is like, you know, injury-related too. Obviously, they still don't have Kawhi Leonard back. That game against the Lakers, they didn't have Aldridge back. But, you know, Brandon Ingram sat out too for the Lakers, and again, they had a 17-point lead, and they just can't close out these games. And so you and I will get in a little bit more discussion here in a bit. As we talk about what's going on with the Spurs as they're spiraling right now. Some more injury news. Kawhi Leonard, you know, he's still out with the quad injury. There's still no clarification of when he's coming back. There was a recent report about him and the Jordan Shoe brand not coming to terms on a new contract extension. Kawhi's camp feels that he should have got a little bit more money with it than what they're offering. Jordan, you know, basically saying, but from what it's reported is that basically, you know, Kawhi doesn't have a lot of stock right now, especially since no one's seen him play here in almost a year. When it gets to May, he's only played in 9 games this season. He hasn't looked like that MVP caliber Kawhi Leonard just yet. So, you know, from Jordan's side, again, he didn't make the All-Star team this year due to his injury situation. They haven't seen him play. You know, a lot of the press about him has been negative, even though he hasn't literally said anything, but, you know, just that the reports that are coming out, how he's unhappy, how all this stuff's going on, how he's been cleared to play. Looking at Rudy Gay, he has a minor eardrum injury where, you know, he hurt his eardrum against the Grizzlies on Monday night, but he's still probably going to play against the Warriors coming up on Thursday. And then Pau Gasol has a right shoulder injury. I saw him come out of the game, and one of the trainers was looking at that shoulder. And so they haven't put an injury report out just yet, but he might be questionable to play against the Warriors on Thursday. So, Ben, just overall, just the injury situation, what your thoughts are?
Injuries are bad, okay?
That's true.
You know, real hot take over here. No, but the Spurs have had a lot of injuries this year. They've lost a lot of games to injuries. And I think it's probably a result of I always feel that there's some sort of injury karma that builds up. You have so many years of good luck where you don't have a lot of players and Pop will rest a lot of guys. This year he hasn't really been able to rest people because they've been injured or other guys have been injured. So other people have to step in and play more minutes. And that leads to an abnormal amount of minutes for people. So sometimes, you know, they're not used to playing those minutes and they get injured for whatever reason. So I think kind of what I call an injury karma that has been coming. So I think the Spurs are going to get ravaged bit by injuries here. And I think they're going to come back next year and they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what we all hope, but that's as long as I can remember, that's kind of how the injury bugs have worked, unless you're the Pelicans, in which case you have no luck at all.
Yeah, and I mean, just to speak to your point, the Spurs have only had their full squad healthy for one game all season, just one game. And in that one game, that's when Rudy Gay got injured with a heel injury. So, you know, it just speaks to your point where they just cannot shake these injuries. They can't really build any kind of consistent squad because they don't know who's in and out. You know, LaMarcus, even though he played against the Grizzlies, he's still a little bit shaken up by that right ankle injury he had suffered against the Pelicans. Okay, Ben, let's go to our second topic, and that has to do, you know, partly with these injuries is the Spurs' record right now. You know, in their last 11 games since February 1st, basically, they're 3-8, the 24th worst record in the 24th record, should I say, in the NBA during that time span. The only other teams around them playing like that are all lottery teams. The Spurs are the only team in the playoff race with that kind of record. You know, during this stretch from February 1st, they're 14th, scoring 108.1 points per 100. Defensively, 108.3, which is 17th. So they've really taken a step back defensively. This is something Pop has mentioned. In the fourth quarter of these games since February 1st, their net rating is a minus 11.2 points per 100, which is 27th. Nice. Yeah, it's bad. In the clutch, you know, since the same time frame, they're 1-6 of those games, which is the last 5 minutes either ahead or behind by 5 points. And their net rating during this time is a minus 51.8 points per 100, 29th in the league during clutch time during this. Yeah, it's bad. Defensively, they're giving up 137 points per 100 possessions, which is 30th, dead last among all teams in the clutch situation since February 1st. You know, Pop has kind of hinted that he mentioned the word the team might be low on fuel. He mentioned that before the Lakers game the other night. Is this a mixture from what you're seeing of young guys having to be dependent on, but then mixed in with some older guys, you know, Powell, Manu, Parker, you know, some of these other guys that are also like their legs are getting tired, but also there's a lot of inexperienced guys right now that the Spurs are relying on.
Yeah, I mean, tough to find that mixture of dudes who are young and can win you games, but you also have to get your veterans in there to win the games. But the veterans can't give you all that you're used to seeing from them because they've been playing so many minutes. It's a vicious cycle, and it's one the Spurs can't get out of because they can't get healthy. They're forced to play, some of their younger players like Bryn Forbes and DeJounte Murray in minutes they wouldn't necessarily want to play them because they want them to be on the bench watching how you perform in clutch time rather than throwing them out there and saying, all right, good luck, win us the game. So that's part of the issue, I think, for the Spurs right now. And then, like Ed, the older guys are forced to come in. They play more minutes than they should be playing. They're running low on fuel. They're tired. I think a lot of the Spurs would agree. They just want the season over. They want to get out of here. If that means barely missing the playoffs, so be it. If it means an easy round exit, so be it. But they just need to get out to the offseason and regroup. They just don't play overseas at all. Don't do any country. Don't play for your country. Just sit down, relax. Get a massage. Don't do anything but work out. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, to your point there, you know, the fan base is a little angry, some of them, because they feel that, you know, the Spurs are giving up these big leads. which is true by the data perspective. You know, in 7 of their last 11 games, they've been up by 10 points or more, and they've only won 3 of those games. That's the crazy thing. I mean, they're only 3-8 overall during this 11 games. So that tells you that they cannot sustain these leads even when they build them against whether it's a good team or a bad team. You know, and to your point also, you know, you mentioned DeJounte Murray, and you know, Pop gave him the keys to the point guard role here. And, you know, in the first and third quarter, he looks really good. You know, he's going up and down the court. He's being a defensive presence, rebounding machine. He's hitting the mid-range jumper every now and then. But here's one of those stats from the clutch area that I was talking about since February 1st. His net rating is a minus 56.4, and the Spurs are 0-5 since February 1st with DeJounte in those last 5 minutes of a game. And so, again, that speaks – I mean, the rest of the guys only have one win either way, so because remember, the team's 1-6. But that, again,
right.
that speaks to, you know, when games get close, you need veteran players. And DeJounte is, you know, when he can't run up and down the court, he needs to slow the pace down the tempo. You know, it just everything, you know, it gets so much more. There's more pressure on him to try to, you know, execute. And that's tough for him as a young player in only his second year. And so that's why against the Grizzlies last night, you saw Tony Parker closing the show. And he helped put the Grizzlies away there at the end. Some more stats here in the clutch time. Kyle Anderson has a team-high three turnovers. So does DeJounte Murray. Patty Mills and Manu are the other two with two turnovers each in clutch time since February 1st. So, again, like you mentioned, Ben, this shows that these younger guys, Kyle, DeJounte Murray, they're being relied upon a little bit more here, and they're just not able to step up to the plate, especially when they're having to be sometimes the number one option or number two when LaMarcus is out, when Rudy Gay might be out, when Kawhi's been out all year. So I think that it's all a snowball, and you know the fan base is obviously going to be very upset that they're not closing out these games. And like you mentioned, Ben, like it could either be out of the playoffs, like we're going to talk about here in a little bit, or getting a high 7 or 8 seed there, or a low 7 or 8 seed, should I say, and probably losing to Golden State or Houston. Again, this is all in the event that Kawhi doesn't come back 100%. And again, for Kawhi, there's 18 games left. When the Spurs come back from this 3-game road trip, they're going to only have 15 games to bring him back.
Yeah, it's – even if he comes back, I mean, you – this is when your economics class comes in handy, because now you have a classic, you know, cost-benefit analysis going on here. You know, at what point is it worth it to bring back Kawhi Leonard and have him playing in games for the playoffs if – you're going to get a low seed and get bounced in the first round? Worth it to bring Kawhi Leonard back at all? Or do you say, you know what, screw it, sit out the rest of the season, get yourself completely healthy, work out this offseason, get angry, and come back next year?
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's something that they're going to have to evaluate. And like I keep mentioning, you know, it's every day on the calendar that passes by. We haven't heard any reports that he's doing 3-on-3 workouts yet, that he's doing any kind of 5-on-5. And that's kind of the gradual progression that they need to see from him first in practice before he even gets put into a starting lineup again. So that'll be something to watch. Our third topic, Ben, let's go ahead and move on to the NBA draft. You know, as I mentioned to start the show, I'm not used to the Spurs picking in the, you know, in anywhere below like 25, I mean, outside of 25 through 30 range. And so this year it's a bit surprising that they could fall to one of these lower seeds here in the draft order. So here's a few spots, listeners. If the Spurs, let's just say they were to get the 13 in the West, right now they'd be projected to probably get the 26th pick. They got the 4th seed, the 24th, the 5th seed, 22nd, 6th seed, the 21st, 7th seed, the 20th, and 8th seed, the 18th pick in the lottery. I mean, in the draft order this year. However, let's say they do miss the playoffs. Let's say they get the 9th seed where the Clippers are right now. The Spurs would have a 96% chance, according to Tankathon.com, of getting the 13th pick. And if they fell to 10th, where the Utah Jazz are right now, they'd have a 98% chance of getting the 14th pick in the lottery. So, Ben, as I mentioned, you're our draft expert here at Project Spurs. Who are the players in that 13 to 14 lottery range that you really think could have an impact if the Spurs do end up falling in those kind of ranges?
If the Spurs somehow get lucky enough to get the 13th or 14th pick in this draft – most of the mock drafts I've seen have Miles Bridges and Robert Williams falling to those slots. And there are a couple that even have Colin Sexton falling there. Now, Miles Bridges, forward out of Michigan State, He's been playing very much out of position all year, but has been excellent. Tom Izzo's been using him very weirdly because last year he was kind of a slashing do-it-all three-man, and this year he's kind of a spot-up stretch four. It's very weird. But he's hitting his threes, and he looks really good. He's improved his game, which is ironic because he would have been a top 10 pick if he had come out last year, but he decided to stay a year because Tom Izzo has weird sway over his players like that. And Robert Williams actually did the same thing at Texas A&M. He was probably going to be a top 15 pick. He comes back. He's a 6'9 forward, really good rebounder, great defensive player. He could be a really nice forward for the Spurs, kind of depending on what happens this summer, you know, what positions they're going to be looking for. And Colin Sexton, Alabama point guard, was just named SEC co-freshman of the year. They call him the young bull, mostly because he bulls his way into the paint and gets to the free throw line. And he's a good free throw shooter. He's an okay shooter all around, but very quick. He's fast. He's a smooth athlete. He can jump. Those are three of the guys I would look at in the 13-14 range.
Okay, I was just looking for some analysis here. I mean, some projections, and TheRinger.com, they had a guy named Kevin Knox out of Kentucky. What's the intel on him?
I don't think he drops that far.
Okay,
when he was coming out of high school, he was getting a lot of Kevin Durant comparisons because he's like a 6'9". He's really long. He can shoot it from anywhere. But he's shown this year that he doesn't really have a penchant for playing defense. But we don't really know how much of that is because he's playing with a bunch of other freshmen. And Coach Calipari just hasn't gotten that team to play defense a lot of the year. So it's weird. He for now, as it stands, he's not really a defensive guy,
okay,
but he's a very good shooter, and a lot of people like a Kevin Durant comparison to him. So I think there maybe is one other mock draft I've seen that has him dropping that low, but most people have him as a top 10 pick.
Okay, so he's in the top 10 range. Okay, cool. Thanks for that clarification. Let's go through the 15 through 20 range. Are there any players there, like let's say San Antonio ends up in that range?
Oh, yeah. So I got a list of guys. I got Troy Brown out of Oregon. He's a shooting guard. I have Gary Trent Jr. out of Duke. And yes, he is the son of former NBA player Gary Trent. He's a shooting guard. Daniel Gafford out of Arkansas has been a really nice surprise this year. He's been shooting up boards. He's in that 15 to 20 range. He's a center. Miami freshman Lonnie Walker, shooting guard. They call him the pineapple because of his hairstyle. So if you get a chance, look him up.
Okay.
It's great. If SpongeBob lived in a pineapple under the sea, there is certainly someone out there who could live in the pineapple on top of his head. Kyrie Thomas, another shooting guard out of Creighton. There is definitely a theme developing here. Mitchell Robinson. I actually just wrote him up a couple weeks ago. He's got a really interesting story. He was a top 15 recruit in the 2017 recruiting class. Initially commits to Western Kentucky, which in itself is crazy. Decides, oh, I don't know, I don't really want to be at school. Takes like a month off during the summer after he had enrolled in the summer. Decides, oh, maybe I do want to come back. Tries to get reinstated and then finally says, you know what, screw it. I'm taking the year off, and I'm just going to train for the NBA draft. So no one's really seen what he's done. But he's a 7-foot center. He's a very smooth athlete. He's got hops. So he would probably be a pretty raw prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen him jumping up into the 15-20 range. But if it were me, I would try and get him later in the draft. If the Spurs somehow end up with like a 25-26 pick, I think that'd be better value for him. But I've seen a lot of people with him at the 15 to 20 range right now.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering why when I saw his name on a draft board, it says USA is where he's from, is you know his representation, and not a school, and that's why that's the guy right. I remember you wrote about him. Okay, so he's not actually on a college team. Yeah, NBADraft.net has him at 20th right now in their projection.
Okay.
Okay, so now let's say that the Spurs do end up playing a little bit better than the 20th pick. Is there anyone in that 21 through like 26, 27 range?
Yeah, so there's one guy. He's taking a very interesting path to the NBA. His kid's name is Anfernee Simons.
Anfernee Simons.
All right. He was supposed to be. So it started out, he was a 2019 recruit. No. I'm sorry. His story is just crazy. Basically, he was committed to Louisville, mm-hmm. and then all the Rick Pitino stuff happened. Rick Pitino was ousted. He's gone. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know what? I don't want to mess with that. So he's taking a postgraduate year at the IMG Academy in Florida, and he will be eligible for the draft. He's a combo guard. He's like 6'3", 6'4". Kid can jump out of the building. He's a very good shooter. He's very skinny, though. You'd have to put on a lot of weight to play in the NBA, but I've seen him projected almost everywhere. So he's just kind of to look out for in general. Mm-hmm. As far as the 21 to 26, 27 range, you have a Kyrie Thomas. I'm going to be writing him up soon enough.
Okay.
He plays for Creighton. He's a shooting guard. Hamidou Diallo for Kentucky. He's a shooting guard. He actually went to Kentucky last year in January. He enrolled early. He was supposed to be a 2017. His first freshman semester should have been over the summer this year, but it was actually in the spring. Or not this year, but 2017. Mm-hmm. But his first semester was actually in the spring of 2017. So he actually tested the combine waters. He went out, did all the testing, and he was one of the most athletically gifted guys at the combine. He's a total freak. Has something like a 40-plus-inch vertical.
Wow. Yeah.
Crazy. So he's a guy to look for. Landry Shamet, mm-hmm. who I wrote up very early in the season for Wichita State. He is probably – I would say he's maybe the most NBA-ready point guard of guys in that range. He's very lanky. He also would have to put on some weight, but he's a smart guard, handles the ball well, doesn't turn it over often. Raleigh Alkins out of Arizona, point guard. He's played really well. He's had some issues with PED substances. He was suspended for a while last year. He was suspended for a game or two this year, but it was appealed, and it turns out the test itself was bad or something. So that's something to keep an eye on. Grayson Allen out of Duke falls in that range. Chimezie Metu out of USC. Pac-12 has been down this year, so you don't hear a lot about those guys out there, but he's been pretty good. Brandon McCoy out of UNLV, another 7-foot center, super athletic, kind of raw, but, with the right molding, could be good. Mm. And Kata Bates Diop out of Ohio, he's a small forward. I'd have him in that range as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah, those are like a lot of the guys that I had seen some of these draft boards as well. So Spurscast listeners, if you do want to read some of these profiles, like Ben mentioned, he's still writing some up, but some of the ones that are on Project Spurs right now, if you just go find Ben's page, all his prospects are there that he's written up this year, are Mitchell Robinson, who right now on NBA Draft Net is supposed to go 20th, Landry Shamet is supposed to go 21st, Trayvon Duvall, 22nd, Grayson Allen, 23rd, Brandon McCoy, 25th, Austin Wiley, 28th, Jonte Porter, 29th, and Moritz Wagner, 30th. Ben, have some of those guys fallen, or are there still like that 28 through 29, 30 range, those last three guys?
Funny enough, I've seen some mock drafts that have Jonte Porter way higher.
Oh, okay.
They've got him in like the 16 to 20 range. He was also named the sixth man of the year in the SEC, but he started coming on really strong at the end of the season. He's got a really good pedigree. I actually just wrote him up this week. So, if y'all are looking to read up on him, please do. He's of Michael Porter Jr., who was the top recruit in the, depending on which recruiting service you're looking at, he was the top recruit in the 2017 class. Mm-hmm. he played all of 2 minutes this year and had a back issue. So he's still projected to be a top five pick. So don't get too excited about Michael Porter there. But yeah, he's got great pedigree. His dad is a coach, and he's really stepped in nicely for Missouri this year, who could be going to the dance depending on how they play in the SEC tournament this week.
What about a center named Omer Yurtseven, North Carolina State, or NC State?
Yes, Omer Yurtseven. I like him a lot. There was talk he might come out last year, but he didn't have the year people hoped. He was playing with Dennis Smith Jr. last year, although he was with the Mavs now, and he is very good. He's a solid shooter. I don't know off the top of my head if he's really a three-point shooter, but he's played a lot better this year, and NC State could be as well, and that's a huge improvement considering I'm not sure they won double-digit games last year. So they got a new coach, and he's obviously gotten them where they need to be. And Yurtseven has been a huge part of that this year. I think he is originally from Turkey.
Okay. Ben, looking at the positions of the Spurs, and I'm just gonna read you the positions that are guaranteed next year, as far as on the roster. So at the point guard, they have DeJounte Murray and Derek White coming back for sure. Combo guard, mm-hmm. they have Patty Mills coming back. Wings, Kawhi Leonard and Manu. Obviously, Manu might retire, but he still has a guaranteed deal, so I'm putting him in that camp. Forwards, they have no one right now. If Rudy Gay leaves in free agency, and same thing for Kyle Anderson, they wouldn't have a forward, like a 3-4 kind of guy. And then bigs, the only players under contract for sure next year are Aldridge and Pau Gasol. So you mainly read a lot of shooting guards there in that list.
Yeah.
But from the Spurs' perspective, do you think they target a specific position to fill, or do you think they just take the best available player that's kind of in their that range of wherever they pick at?
I very much think it depends on how they work this offseason. If they make some moves before the draft, if they get a couple trades, or if they sign a couple guys, I think that'll change things. Mm-hmm. Although I do believe if they somehow get that 13-14 pick, that they would go best available. If you end up with a later pick in the 20s, I think they'll go kind of best fit or guy, maybe a guy they can stash or a guy that they don't mind spending a year kind of developing, saying, all right, you know, you're going to get some time this year, but we're really not going to play you too much. We want you to get in the gym, get bigger, and come back and, you know, come back next year and be ready to play.
Let's just say, Ben, that everything that they didn't make the playoffs and they fall to that 9th, 10th spot out west, which means the 13th or 14th pick in the lottery. Which of these three guys, Miles Bridges, Robert Williams, or Colin Sexton, do you think is most, I wouldn't just say NBA ready, but I say would earn the, may possibly earn the respect of Pop, where Pop might actually give him like a rotation spot next season out of those three guys?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I guess you could call it an impact player. Who do you think could actually, you know, Kawhi actually did play in year one. Who would be that guy out of those three?
I really do. Man, I don't think they would take Colin Sexton there just because he'd be another point guard.
Okay.
But I really do like both those guys. But I think Miles Bridges,
okay,
would be the guy. He can defend 3 to 4 positions. His body is pretty much NBA ready, and he's shown that he can shoot the ball. So I think if they kind of throw him out there and say, listen, just be an athlete, man, and do stuff, he'll be fine, and he'll perform.
Okay, yeah, cool. All right, thanks, man, for that. Because, again, like I said, you know, Spurs cast listeners, like, you know, watch the tournament next week starting March 13th. It begins March Madness. You know, and a lot of these guys, and then if some of these guys aren't in the tournament, you know, go back and just watch some of their clips and stuff from this year. Because, you know, this could really be a season where it looks like the Spurs, they're either going to get a very, you know, if they end up late in the playoff seeding, 7th or 8th, you know, seed, they're going to get a pretty good pick there in the low 20s. But then also, if they just miss it altogether, you know, maybe Kawhi doesn't come back, maybe the rest of their schedule is just too hard for them to crack the playoff rotation, they could be in that 13th, 14th area. And just like Ben mentioned, you know, there's going to be some players out there that are out there to watch that are very intriguing. Thanks, Ben, for that analysis of the draft. And we're probably for sure gonna have you back on here, especially as the draft approaches and there's some names that are getting leaked out. Because we need
your, I like to hear.
Yeah, we need your expertise for that segment of the season. Okay, SpursCast listeners, Ben and I are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by ADT. When it comes to something as important as your family safety, you need real protection with ADT. What does real protection mean for you? Well, real protection means you can get all of the latest innovation in smart home security from ADT combined with 24/7 monitoring from the most trusted name in home security. You'll get a team of professionals designing and installing a secure smart home just for you, including 18,000 employees safeguarding you and your family, along with a connection to first responders. Your secure smart home includes everything from video doorbells and indoor and outdoor cameras to smart locks and lights controlled from the ADT Go app or the sound of your voice. You can also get professionally monitored carbon monoxide and smoke detectors. Everything is custom designed to fit your home, all from the nation's number one smart home security provider. You can even get safety on the go, in the car, or when the kids are at school with the ADT Go app with an SOS button. Ready to learn more? Visit ADT.com/podcast to learn more about how ADT can design and install a secure smart home just for you.
Thank you for tuning in to SpursCast, episode 485. I am joined by Project Spurs' Benjamin Bornstein. If you're on Twitter, you can follow him at @_Boomstein. Okay, SpursCast listeners, you all sent us your questions using the hashtag SpursCast, so now Ben and I are going to go ahead and answer some of them. This first question, Ben, comes from @BurrModise. It was actually a question held on from last week, but they had sent it in a little bit later than when John and I had already recorded. The question is, is this the last year for sure of Manu? I am a big fan from Argentina, currently living abroad. And who are your top three Latin American players all time and at the present? So just to, yeah, it's a little bit of a loaded question here. You know, Manu's slated to make $2.5 million guaranteed next season. So right now on the financial books, it looks like Manu is coming back, but he could take that Tim Duncan route where Timmy had a final year guaranteed and he ended up, just retiring. So that's always in play. And so Ben, you know, you can, my first question, then I'll go ahead and take it this way. Do you think Manu is retiring or he's coming back next year?
I'm inclined to think he's retiring. The man is 40 years old. And, I think it also depends on what else the Spurs do. And if they kind of whisper to him and say, We need you to retire so we can get that money off the books and have some more money to pay guys to win games. You know, he might say, all right, that's cool. I'll head out. Peace. But, you know, if he really thinks he can play at a good level like he has been for another year, then I'm not going to be mad about it.
Okay. I think it depends on what happens this summer in terms of their offseason moves. You know, if they're still in that contender status, if the relationship with Kawhi is good, and you know we can tell by that point if he's coming back or not with San Antonio, I think he'll give it another shot. Just because of the level, like you mentioned, his play has been outstanding this year for his age at 40. He's still making all sorts of effective play on both ends of the court. Now not every night, but in big games he is from time to time. And so I think that if he sees that there's still a chance at a ring, that he'll probably come back. But you never know. You know, last summer it did look like he was going to retire. He even said, you know, he went into that summer thinking this might be it, and he ended up right at the end there coming back and giving another season. As far as the top three Latin American players of all time for me and present, I'm just going to say top five players that I really like from Latin America over the years. You know, number one is definitely Manu. Number two is Andres Nocione. I really liked his play over the years, not just in the NBA, but also, you know, the Argentine national team over the summers. He continued playing when Manu wasn't. Luis Scola's always been a guy I've looked up to, both in the NBA level, but then also, again, with Argentina, how he's played. And then, of course, you know, you have to give Thiago Splitter a shout-out. He won with the Spurs back in 2014. He didn't have quite the career he wanted because of his injury history. And then right now, present day, Al Horford's a really good player for the Celtics. You know, he has them right there at the top. He's been a pretty good player here from Latin America. Who are some of the guys you've seen, Ben?
Manu, always on the list. Mm-hmm. I like Al Horford as well for multiple reasons. He's a Florida guy, so that's my dude. A guy who doesn't get enough love, in my opinion, is Leandro Barbosa.
Yes, that's my definite one. Mm-hmm, one player.
And my favorite besides Manu currently is probably J.J. Barea, because that dude is pound for pound the feistiest dude on the court at any given time.
Yeah, he's still, you know, creating mismatches, not in mismatches, but he's still, like, wreaking havoc on offense to this day, even at his age, certain time segments for Dallas there. Okay, Ben, our next question comes from @GricoSuave. They ask, is playing kind of good while more bad down the stretch and still losing the Spurs' version of tanking?
That's good. Yes, I think it is. If you can show in spots that you're playing well with your young, I think the important thing, the distinction there is with your young players. If you can show that you're playing well with your young players and you still lose games, yes, I would say that's the Spurs version of tanking.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're doing it, like you mentioned, I don't think they're doing it on purpose, but, you know, they're working hard there. They're trying to win these games. You can just see, you know, even that game against the Grizzlies where they almost lost, you know, Pop said it wasn't about effort. It's just that the shots are going, these guys are tired. It's just a lot of inexperience out there as well. So, you know, if Kawhi doesn't come back to 100% before the season ends and going into the playoffs, I just feel like, you know, this, you kind of know where their ending road is here for this team. It's either a low playoff seed as far as like 7-8 range, and then if not a 9-10, and getting a lottery pick. And so, you know, they're going to go down swinging, this team that they have out there, and, you know, however far they do get. Next question, Ben, comes from @KeithStaster. They ask, a lot of fans would prefer to see the Spurs drop into the lottery instead of limping into the playoffs. How deep is the draft, and what are the odds that a pick in the 10 to 14 range would result in a difference maker? Would that be much different than 15 to 20? I guess we don't have to answer that one, Ben, because you and I kind of did a deep dive there earlier on just that exact type of question.
Yeah, well, we named a lot of prospects, but when it comes down to it, this particular year, getting anybody in the lottery is going to probably be a huge, huge difference from getting someone in the later 20s. Now, granted, there are a ton of diamonds in the rough here that could end up contributing and being good, but the dudes, there are the guys who are probably going top 10. They can immediately make an impact and a big one on whichever team they go to.
Okay.
So long as the fit is there.
Okay. So there's Ben for that response there, because like I mentioned, Ben's our college guy for this stuff. I'm not big into the college game. I'll watch a little bit here when March Madness starts, but Ben's definitely our go-to person here. So it's a great thing we have him on this episode for that question. Our last question, Ben, comes from @Matt Babberitz or Babriarts. I'm not sure. They ask, do you expect Danny Green to opt in? Is the latest move of leaving him out of the starting five an indication that his Spurs days are coming to an end?
That's tough to say. How much is he owed next year, I guess?
He has a player option for $10 million coming up here in the summer.
Yeah, that's going to be real hard to turn down, especially since the market for him is probably not going to pay him more than that if he were to opt out and try and become a free agent. I would say that him getting out of the starting lineup is probably having to do with him shooting poorly this year, at least overall. He's still shooting 38.5% from three, which is great, but he's shooting about 41% from the field overall. Mm-hmm. So I think some of it's that, and some of it is they really just want to get the young guys more minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, I think that, you know, this is a tough one to call just because he did switch agencies as John and I talked about last week, right on trade deadline day, where he went to Roc Nation as his new agency. But you're right, where there's no money this summer, you know, especially for role players like Danny Green, despite him being an all-NBA level defender. You know, you saw a guy like Lou Williams, who was like a borderline all-star, only make $8 million when he signed that new contract extension with the Clippers. So that he kind of set the market just right there. If Lou Williams is getting $8 million, I'm not sure if Danny Green can get a little bit more than that, or especially more than $10 million. So financially, if I think to play it safe, he should just he might just opt in. But if maybe he wants to take a risk and go on and see how much he could get on the free agent market, maybe he's not happy with becoming coming off the bench, then he could definitely test those waters. I think that if Kawhi does come back, you know, in these last 18 games, I think Danny goes back to starting two. Or, you know, even if Kawhi's been playing all this season, I think that he would have been in the starting lineup. I think, as Pop mentioned, putting Patty Mills as a starter is more so to get the offense going early instead of for them, you know, starting off very lagging as they've been doing most of the season.
Yeah.
Ben, let's go ahead and move into the Spurs' upcoming four games here. You know, their first game, this is a tough road trip, man. This is one that's kind of been circled on the calendar all year. And back in like when the schedule came out back in early, you know, late September, no one thought that they'd be a fifth seed in the West at this point with still no Kawhi. And so this is going to be grueling for them. So Ben, the first game comes Thursday at Golden State. The Warriors are 49-14, second in the West, 8-2 in the last 10. They have the best offense in the NBA, 114 points per 100. The sixth best defense, 103.4 points per 100. Who do you have Thursday night between the Spurs and Warriors?
How many times are the Spurs going to die on the court is probably the better question. I'd put the over-under on 2.5 dead Spurs. But for real, I got the Warriors. So I have them going 1-2 on this trip. I think they will beat the Thunder.
Okay. Okay. Well. So you have the Warriors. I have the Warriors also. You know, it'll be surprising if the Spurs can again get a early lead like they did against Golden State last time, where I think they had a 12-point lead, but the Warriors eventually came back and won. Then Ben, as you mentioned, Saturday the Spurs go to Oklahoma City to play the Thunder. The Thunder are 37-28, seventh as of tonight that we're recording this. They could fall or go ahead depending on their game tonight against the Rockets. OKC 6-4 in their last 10. The Thunder are 12th offensively, 106.9 points per 100. Defensively, they're holding teams to 104.4, which is ninth. And you say you're taking the Thunder on. I mean, you're taking the Spurs on Saturday against the Thunder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that one, I'm taking the Thunder again, just because I had told some people at the game last night. You know, if the Spurs would have came out and really just took it to Memphis easily, you know, with LaMarcus back, you know, won by like a good comfortable 10 to 15 points, I felt better about them winning on the road against Oklahoma City. But after seeing that performance against the Grizzlies, I just still don't think this team has enough to beat the Thunder. Maybe I'll be wrong, so I'm going to take a loss there for the Spurs. Then Ben on Monday, the Spurs play at Houston. The Rockets are 49-13, the best record in the NBA, first in the Western Conference. They are 10-0 in their last 10 and 15 and on a 15-game winning streak overall. The Rockets just 15. The Rockets have the second best offense in the NBA, 113.4 points for 100. The 10th best defense, 104.5. Who do you have in this one between the Spurs and Rockets?
I got the Rockets, man. There's too much offense there.
Okay,
that makes me sad.
Same here. I have the Rockets. So at this point, I have the Spurs going 0-3. You have the Spurs going 1-2. Then, Ben, on Tuesday, the Spurs return home to play the Orlando Magic. Jonathan Simmons makes his return to the AT&T Center. The Magic are not very good. They're 20-44 overall, tied for last in the Eastern Conference. They're 3-7 in their last 10. Offensively, 19th, 104.5 points per 100. Defensively, 108.8, which is 27th. Who do you have against the tanking Magic?
This should be a win for the Spurs. They should very much beat the Tragic.
Okay. So, all right, so I have a win also for the Spurs. So by the time the Spurs by the time I record the next episode, sometime next Wednesday, I think the Spurs will be 30-30, and Ben, you have them being 39 and it looks like 29 probably at this point, if I'm correct. Yeah, 39-29. So Ben has them going 2-2, I have them going 1-3. We'll see how that fares out. Thanks again, Ben, for joining us in Spurscast episode 485. Again, Spurscast listeners, if you want to read about any of the prospects that Ben's written about in the past this season or coming up in the future here before the season ends, do visit projectspurs.com. Look up his name in the author title, and you'll see a big profile of all his work. He's done a great job, as I mentioned. So thanks again, Ben, for joining, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having
me. Awesome. You have a great day.
You too.
Thanks again to Ben for joining me on Spurscast 485. If you're on Twitter, you can follow him at the_Boomstein. Please continue to send us questions using the hashtag SpursCast, and we'll make sure to answer them on each weekly episode of the SpursCast. If you're on Twitter, follow us at Project Spurs, at @ATLeague_NBA, at the SpursCast, and at Project Spurs Network. Online, visit us at ProjectSpurs.com, AnalyzingTheLeague.com, and ProjectSpurs.net. And if you're listening to this on iTunes, please leave us a rating or review. Thank you. Have a great day.